On today's College Football Inquirer, we attempt to predict the college football playoff rankings, and you may be listening to this after they've come out, so you can test our work. I got faith that we're going to be very, very accurate. Also, Wisconsin decides to keep Luke Fickell for 2026, and he engineers a victory against Washington. Do the Badgers have it right and everybody else has it wrong? We'll discuss. Also, more fallout from Ross's bombshell story on Sunday about the Big Ten trying to push through its private equity deal, even without Michigan and USC. We'll talk about that as well, all today on the College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. It's a Tuesday in November. You know what that means. There's a made-for-TV show with rankings that don't need to be done tonight.
Huh.
Did I say that right, Godfrey?
Yeah, that was very good. Yeah, I was going to make a Mac football joke, but
maybe it's helping the Mac ratings. Maybe that's the reason we should be doing this. Maybe
and
it's
we're not going to talk about the ratings either, so that's fun.
We're going to ignore them,
aren't we?
Yes.
Are we going to ignore
absolutely.
Them?
I would. I want to. We didn't discuss this before the show, but yeah, absolutely.
We should ignore them.
Well, I mean, but why are average fans... I don't think average fans are obsessed with ratings. I think we in the media are.
Correct.
And then we project that onto our audience that doesn't really care.
Yeah, I got...
But
I
was wondering about that. Is it them or us? I think it's more us.
I think we crossed some sort of weird threshold during the Deion Sanders year one thing at Colorado, where I feel like we in the media get so... I hate saying that phrase, but it's true. We in the media get so desperate in September to identify the year's narrative, finding theme. And the way Deion took off in TV ratings specifically... By the way, totally unexplained phenomenon, and it's one that I talk to people at ESPN who do their like interior analytics for like engagement inside of the giant ESPN apparatus, and they have acknowledged, much like the Taylor Swift effect in the NFL, it can't really be replicated. There's not a lot to learn from it, and the audience that flooded in for Deion just as easily left in the same speed.
Yeah, they did not watch the West Virginia game on TNT on Saturday. I did, but they didn't. Caden Salter actually... could be good if, not Caden Salter, I'm sorry, Juju Lewis could be good if given time. Just throwing that out there.
The Kent State Akron game is during ratings night, rankings night, I should say. So, I mean, bully for a classic Northeastern Ohio rivalry. Two programs that need to be put out of their misery and sent to the FCS.
You're so mean.
Yeah, sorry.
They're going to have this show, and I don't know that a whole lot's going to happen in this show. BYU's going to drop out because they got clobbered by Texas Tech. Do we think anything will happen at the top? Given what happened to Indiana, the scare they got from Penn State, is there any chance that we see Texas A&M hop Indiana?
I would be okay with it. I think I closed the show this way on Sunday because of the another road win in the league. And if we're just, look, Andy, pro wrestling sound alert, you ready? Okay. If everything is pro wrestling... If you are manufacturing this television show to create engagement week to week, I do think a somewhat arbitrary shuffling of the top when you don't have a loss to actually create momentum or movement, why not? Why not say, hey, just by virtue of the existing resume plus this past, plus November 8th, Texas A&M, by virtue of another road win against a ranked team in their league, you're number one this week. Why not?
Yeah.
So
create some news? Is that what you're trying to do? Godfrey, you're saying the media... A media
doing it for the,
an ESPN-driven media like partner.
It makes its own gravy, Ross. It's like the old dog food that if you put it in water and stirred it, it made its own gravy. That's what this is. If it's pro wrestling, Godfrey, so it's absent a match. You basically have an episode of Piper's Pit or Brutus's Barbershop.
No, you show up. You show up to TV one morning and they go, "Hey, so and so's injured." That opening segment on the mic is going to be 16 minutes, and we just got to. we're going to figure it out when we get in the ring. I've been there for that.
I wouldn't have a problem with it either if A&M jumped, Indiana. I mean, I have Indiana still as number one in my rankings, but let's look at something that sort of popped up this week is the Indiana strength of schedule argument again, right? We heard a lot about it last year.
God.
And although I think Indiana still has the best or certainly the second best probably win in football this year at Oregon, Indiana's strength of schedule, I think, is hovering around 50 in Texas A&M's
on the resume tab of ESPN's College Football Power Index, which is something that the committee looks at. Indiana's strength of schedule is 33rd, which is not terrible.
I'm looking at Sagarin.
Ah, yes.
I don't know how he does it differently.
Tried to play a boy like he's Sagarin.
Yeah.
What did Jeff Sagarin think when he was name checked by Jay-Z? How did that go in Jeff Sagarin's house?
What is the schedule strength on the tab for A&M in the ESPN?
Well, and now I have moved away from it, but I got it right here.
It's number 10 in Sagarin. It's number 10.
It is 15 in the ESPN, but their strength of record, which is the
record of how their teams
an average team would do against your schedule, how an average top 25 team would do against your schedule. Yeah. For Texas A&M, the strength of record is number 1, and for Indiana, it's number 2.
Wow. Okay.
I'm over here.
Ohio State is number 3, and Bama's 4, Georgia 5.
Andy, didn't you poke holes in the A&M resume in terms of schedule strength? This is the problem when you do 25 shows.
I can poke holes in the A&M SEC part of the resume.
Not the Notre Dame part.
Unassailable right now. So
yeah, Utah State looking okay too.
So I think that their SEC schedule turned out a little bit easier than expected.
Yeah,
but we'll see how Missouri does in the last couple games.
Feels like
because they could still.
Yeah, go ahead. I was going to say, it feels like the Mississippi State win. Yeah, Auburn. Yeah, okay, you're right. Actually, I have nothing to argue here.
They're going to play Texas.
Yeah.
By the end of the year, you would think that they'll have a pretty decent resume with Texas on there and the road game at Missouri. And Missouri finishes strong.
I don't know if the committee's going to get this semantic. It is a, in hindsight, opportunistic conference schedule. But it's not like you can engineer that when they got Auburn, when they got State, when they got Florida, when they got, I mean, they beat Petrino by 3 points in a sort of.
Yeah, they got Florida immediately after Florida beat Texas, where you could just say, I mean, you could predict it instantly. The second the Florida beat Texas, they're going to lose at A&M. There's no question about
that. Yeah, but the LSU win for whatever it is now was, I think that would have been the same at any point in the season because of the vitriol there. And that was a game, that was a little bit of a circle the calendar game. And I think that was A&M at its finest because they were playing with a little less of, I was on the daily on Yahoo and I was talking about you want to be boring. You don't want to draw attention. This is part of the Elko effect and the whole find your Elko. But that one was spicy. I think that rivalry is just not recognized enough
nationally.
I don't
think A&M's boring, by the way. I really don't. I think they have a very exciting, explosive offense. They sack you receiver, on defense.
No, I don't mean football-wise. I mean that there's nothing. Look, the in-state rival had the most, over-publicized. I'm not yelling at you. We had the Arch effect all summer, right? We've had Palace intrigue at places like LSU. Alabama, we're going to fire them after week one. They may be the best team in the country after that. A&M sort of fits comfortably, quietly inside of the, if it's possible to be undefeated in the league and do it quietly, that's what they're doing.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's just funny because you had Arch, in the Warby Parker commercial, in the Ferrari commercial. Yeah. Marcel Reed had that Sonic ad with Colin Simmons and Ryan Wingo. So, He even had to share it with Texas players.
didn't Mac Rhodes actually mispronounce Marcel Reed's name too? I'm not sure how many people know Marcel Reed, and certainly the chair. I think he's called him Marcus Reed or something like that. So
we
talked about Ohio State last week. I think one of our topics was overshadowed Ohio State, right? There's a little bit of overshadowing going on with A&M too.
The beauty of A&M, though, for them, is they can't mathematically go 8-4 anymore. So for their fans last week, the win was just
right. That's right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the drama-free part of them is probably a breath of fresh air for that fan base, because that school is just drama almost exclusively. Going back to hiring Jackie Sherrill away from Pitt, it is nonstop over and over and over again, and that they can't seem to get over the hump. This team looks capable of getting over the hump. and it came in with no fanfare whatsoever.
They were the Big 12's Auburn. Back the original Big 12, they were the big, they were the Auburn of the Big 12, not so much in performance.
But not even that accomplished.
No.
Right?
Yeah, didn't have a title to show for it. Yeah, right. them being this quiet, it's weird, right? It's odd. Mm-hmm. But it's a great thing. Like, I'm not question. I mean, this is exactly what you want to do. This is exactly where you want to be if you're contending for a national title right now and you have a zero in the loss column.
Well, and they're such a fun team to watch. And we've talked about everybody and their flaws, with the exception of Ohio State, which we're not sure they have any. But A&M hasn't really shown a lot of flaws either.
Mm-mm. No. My former podcast co-host, Bill Connolly, put out a little piece this morning questioning maybe some of the run game. I think it's less of the efficacy and more the decision-making on run game with some of the top teams at Bama and A&M. Mm. But this is also, it was kind of like what I was doing on Sunday talking about. And by the way, he agreed with me, Andy, on the quarterback play of One Texas Tech. You're picking nits at this point to try and find something like an entry point into being critical of these teams because they
But that's what the playoff is going to be, is picking nits between good teams.
So well, they're banging against each other.
Margins, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're banging against each other.
So yeah, remember last year at SMU, Alabama, right? Like, remember how like tiny we got down, it looked granular. They sort of dug into the data, and you're right. You know, these scoring margins, things like that, everything's just going to be, you know, as we go, by the way, like, man, there's going to be some mad teams left out this year.
Who's angry?
Because the margins are so small, especially in the SEC that we've talked about a lot on the show. Like, the margins are so small. One of these SEC teams is going to get, or three of these SEC teams are going to get left out in the 14-16 range. And there's going to be some mad people.
Here's the thing, Ross. I think if you are in the Big Ten in the SEC and you get to 10-2, you're going to make it in. I'm just looking at the schedules everybody else has to play.
I would think so. Yeah.
There's not going to be enough of those for anybody to be left out.
Right. It's the 9-3, right? It's the 9-3 Texas at number 13 or even number 11, but gets jumped or something like that.
What about Vandy?
Or Vandy?
Vandy's an interesting one because if Vandy goes 10-2, if there's another 10-2 Big Ten or SEC team that they are on the cut line with, they may have a problem resume-wise.
Yeah.
But like I said, I don't think there's going to be.
Scheduling intent can't really be blamed on them. They did a 1-1 with Virginia Tech, and it's when Virginia Tech fires a coach. I mean, it's not like you can say play somebody. I think that would be a bitter pill to swallow. There's other things going on in my neck of the woods because Clark Lee's name continues to gain momentum in certain places for other jobs, which, by the way, if you're the allegedly deep-pocketed brain trust, money trust, whatever, that owns half of the city I'm sitting in, maybe you want to fix that real fast. Maybe you want to have a press release out next week that says agree to an extension.
Clark Lee, Lane Kiffin, these people whose names are out there for multiple jobs, they can sign the extension anytime they want. They're just pushing the number up.
Yes, they can, can't they?
There's three letters that they all have in common. Isn't that weird? Three letters they all have in common. It's not SEC.
They don't all have that in common.
Well, those two do.
Because Mike Elko doesn't have that in common.
Most of them.
No. Mike Elko is a different three-letter agency.
Most of them do, Andy. Right. And one individual who heads that group kind of wrote the playbook.
Yeah. So for those who don't, I feel like we're supposed to let the people behind the curtain. We're referring to CAA, which is Jimmy Sexton's agency.
Not the Colonial Athletic.
He runs the coaching division at CAA, which also represents all kinds of other things. They have movie stars. They have athletes. They have all kinds of people that they represent. But he represents the coaches and some NFL players. William Morris Endeavor, WME, another big agency.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Their coaches division headed up by Clint Dowdle, former Kansas State associate AD, also former lieutenant
assistant
to Jimmy Sexton.
Yeah.
At CAA,
former Bowling Green assistant, I think too. Really wanted to go deep on the resume.
Clint was a hooper back in the day, so Clint played at Christian Brothers University, I believe. Once dropped 20 on Memphis in an exhibition game. Just throwing that out there.
Wow.
And then you've got other agencies. You've got Balch Sports, Patrick Strong and Russ Campbell, who represent a lot of really good coaches. You've got Excel, which is Bynum Jaeger. Who and Brian Harlan, who represent another bunch of good coaches. Like, so these people are the ones that are pulling the strings right now on these coaches. And so Clark Lee, CAA guy, mm-hmm. Mike Elko, WME guy, Lane Kiffin, CAA, like, their agents are smart. They're not going to say, like, nobody's going to Lane Kiffin right now and saying, hey, Lane, do you really want to stay at Ole Miss? Okay. Well, just tell everybody that. No, they're not going to say that. I don't know what he wants to do. But if he wants to stay, they're going to push the price as high as they can before he then says, I'm staying.
To go back, let that sit on the desk.
To go back to Lee for a second. Yes, I am aware of how the game is played, but there's a feeling on West End Avenue that Vanderbilt may be new to this dance and needs to acquit itself like an old hat if they want to stay in the position they're in right now. If we want to talk about playoff worthy Vanderbilt, we need to acquit ourselves accordingly. Be
proactive, right?
That's what I'm proactive. That then again, hint is what I'm getting at.
You're too proactive, and maybe you do something that maybe you shouldn't, right? We've seen plenty of contract extensions in the past for coaches that you're extended because you extend them proactively because they might leave, right? And then, you know, they end up winning six games their next 2 years at school and you got to fire them and pay a big buyout. I mean, it's happened before. I mean, shoot, we talked on the show about Matt Rhule's extension at Nebraska.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, why did you do that? You know, why would you do that for Matt Rhule, who was one, you know, who was like 2-20 or whatever in top 25 games or whatever the record is. But look, if you're an AD right now, you do not want to get into this market. I'm sure you don't want to like get into this pool. And so you do everything you can to not. And we've seen that three coaches, right? We've seen Matt Rhule, Nebraska do it. We've seen Rhett Lashley and SMU do it. And we've seen Cignetti in Indiana so far. Am I missing anybody?
Rhett Lashley.
No, I think that's it so far.
A lot of contract extensions sitting on desks of coaches. Right,
Ross,
now,
that was as smooth and natural a segue into Andy into the next segment as possible. I just want to acknowledge that. I know we still have things
to
talk about
here. Yes, but before we do that, I want to throw some numbers at you about Vandy. Let's get back to Vandy on the field for a second, because I'm glad you brought this up, because this is a team I want everybody to watch in the rankings tonight. 16th in the CFP rankings last week. Mm-hmm. They will jump Virginia, that was 14th and lost. Louisville was 15th and lost. That puts them around the area of 10 Notre Dame, 11 Texas, 12 Oklahoma, 13 Utah. Vandy, still a two-loss team in the SEC. It is possible that Texas and Oklahoma both lose this weekend because they are both on the road against higher-ranked teams.
Yes.
They are both underdogs and, you know, Vegas underdogs on the road. Vandy, by a week from tonight, could be in striking distance and a Kentucky and Tennessee win away from making the playoff.
They would be the five if the SEC could get five, as that's what we're talking about. If everyone holds serve, Georgia wins out. The SEC championship is Alabama versus A&M.
Alabama, probably.
You have Georgia and Ole Miss that we think would be slotted. Probably Georgia, then Ole Miss because of the head-to-head. Mm-hmm. And then we're talking about if the SEC got five bids, Vandy would be the fifth. And now we're in the neighborhood of maybe talking about Vanderbilt versus. So is it Vanderbilt versus Notre Dame? Is it Vanderbilt versus a second team from the ACC or Big 12?
They're not competing against Notre Dame at that point. The only team they might be competing against is a 9-3 Texas that would have beaten A&M.
And beaten Vanderbilt.
And beaten Vanderbilt.
Yes.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So, but would have lost to Georgia, Florida, and Ohio State.
Well, my scenario, A&M's winning out. So it would take care of...
Well, then Texas would not be in the picture at that point.
Right, because they would lose to Georgia and
A&M.
8-4,
Maybe 9-3 Oklahoma?
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I think Vandy gets in over them. A 10-2 Vandy would probably get in. 9-3. So Oklahoma, and I'm the one who said all offseason, this last seven games is the hardest seven game stretch in the history of college football. Actually turned out it's probably not, because the Missouri and LSU games at the very end don't look as daunting as they did. Maybe Matt Zoller's Missouri gets better, but Matt Zoller's Missouri, at least against A&M, looked very different than Bo Perbula, Missouri.
But here's the funny thing about Vanderbilt. Like, I'm looking at resumes, guys. You're putting a nail in the LSU coffin the same way we're giving credit to A&M for that on the resume. Missouri would have been at home. And then really what mm-hmm. you're doing is you're handing a three-loss Tennessee probably its fourth loss on the road. Mm-hmm. That's your credit score, so to speak.
Yeah.
Vandy's going to score very well in the resume areas. I'll tell you right now, their strength of schedule is 21. It's going to go up
mm-hmm.
with Tennessee still on the schedule. Or it's going to stay right around there. The strength of record for Vandy is 11th. They're just behind Texas. They're actually ahead of Oklahoma and Notre Dame and Michigan.
You know, it would really be bad for Vandy if Michigan and or USC decide to win out in or 10-2.
Yeah.
Because you are not leaving. That would be bad. You are right. Definitely not leaving USC out if they beat would have Iowa
a win
and Oregon.
Against Oregon and Iowa. And then Michigan would have a win against Ohio State.
But yep. in that scenario, we're probably bumping Oregon out. And so it would be a four bid.
Maybe. Oregon would be 10-2. I mean, it would be tough. That would be tough.
They have a loss to spend.
Yeah.
Oregon didn't lose to Iowa.
Yeah, it's a loss to spend. Yeah. They just felt like they did.
Yeah.
I watched that entire game in the comments. Yeah, thanks.
They just felt like losers.
It just, yeah, which is how you, that's how you feel when you leave Iowa
City. And
by
the way, in the mix too, what if BYU were to pull the upset and beat Texas Tech in the Big 12 mm-hmm. championship game? Boy, that yep. would be
so that, and I think Texas Tech would still get in that scenario.
That's when we become the most like basketball. Yes. That's when we become the mm-hmm. most like basketball. If BYU were to if we get the return engagement in Dallas, and a BYU team that just got crushed earlier, I know they would still only have the one loss. But that's the one where people would feel like, oh, damn, these automatic bids are causing a problem here because then we can't leave Tech out, right?
Yeah.
And then we're taking someone else's spot. That's right. People are going to start comparing this to basketball.
Bit thieves
don't bother
people.
Me in basketball. Bit thieves are interesting.
Oh, I don't have a problem with it. I'm saying that this is going to go back to your shout out to my friends at WJOX. Like, this is going to be people calling in and talking about, you know, there ain't enough South in here, Paul. Or Cole and Greg.
That's right. Listen, it's going to be, somebody's going to freak out no matter what.
Yeah.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. We found a way to freak out about the basketball last year. There's 34 at-large teams, for God's sake. We freaked out about that. So we'll freak out about this. It's just what we do. It's okay.
Four-loss Duke, ACC champion. Mark it down.
Yeah.
They are 9-4
Duke in the playoff.
In control of their destiny. If they beat Virginia this week, then it's UNC and Wake. Can they do it? Maybe they can.
God bless.
If you want to see us in living color laughing at the idea of a four-loss Power Conference champion, which is entirely possible.
Yeah.
Turn on your smart TV, go to the Yahoo Sports Network on the home screen. Click that. You will have access to all of the Yahoo Sports Network show. Yahoo Sports Daily, which Stephen Godfrey goes on Mondays. I occasionally go on that show too. Ross, probably visiting with Jason Fitz every once in a while as well. You know, he used to be in the band Perry. The man is a musically talented individual. Also, anytime, day or night, no matter your device, yahoosports.tv, and you can get the College Football Inquirer and all of the Yahoo Sports Network shows. When we come back, Wisconsin decided to do the opposite of what seemingly everyone else was doing. Instead of firing its coach, they said, no, we're bringing him back. One week in, looking like a good decision. Let's talk about it. College Football Inquirer. We got to talk coaching carousel, but first I need to issue a correction from the last segment. Clint Dowdle, who we mentioned runs the coaching agent division for Christian Brothers, or for William Morris Endeavor, former Christian Brothers basketball player. I said he dropped 20 on Memphis one year when he was playing. No, he dropped 25 on Memphis.
I did a little fact check.
There you go.
I did a little fact check during the break. Yeah, we want to be.
And this is a John Calipari Memphis team with multiple NBA players, by the way.
Dude, how do you think it feels for all these ex-athlete turned coaches to have an agent that might be able to just absolutely like cross them up mm-hmm.
Clint would annihilate people at the Y.
He's still in playing shape for sure.
Yeah,
it looks like it.
This is just a warning to anybody who thinks they're good at basketball.
Yeah,
if you run into someone who played D2 basketball or is a D1 walk-on, they will destroy you. Yeah. It does not matter how good you think you are. They will destroy you. They will hit every open shot. Their handles will be better than yours. You will not be able to get past them when you drive. Just, I'm warning you now, no matter how good you think you are, they will destroy you. So that's what you're dealing with there. And agents, that's what you're dealing with too.
Yeah, WME's winning that pickup game.
Yeah. Huh. So an agent will not have to do any work right now mm-hmm. is Luke Fickell's agent, because he is staying at Wisconsin. I wish I remembered who his agent was, but I don't.
I can't remember.
He is
either.
Staying at Wisconsin. Chris McIntosh, the athletic director, did a kind of a media tour at the end of last week explaining why. I was one of the people he talked to, and I was fascinated to hear this because I had spent the season, you know, we talked about the situation at Wisconsin, but I wasn't really sure who to assign blame to, how to decide what had happened there. Because Wisconsin looked like they were headed toward 2-10. They are now not headed toward 2-10 because they just beat Washington.
They're headed towards 3-9.
Right. It's not been a good year. It's been very tough on them. And it appears their trajectory is pointing down. And so my question was, because it's obvious what the problem is. The problem is the roster is just not good enough. The roster wasn't good enough last year. It wasn't good enough Fickell's first year. And I kept asking, you know, what's the chicken egg there? Is it that they didn't give Fickell the resources that he needed to go get a good roster? Or was it that they gave him the resources and he chose unwisely in terms of what players he spent money on? And Chris McIntosh basically said, hand up, we did a poor job resourcing Luke Fickell in the first part of the NIL era, the pre-revenue share era. They did not do a great job because while they did raise a lot of money for an indoor practice facility, they raised over $100 million in a couple of years, they did not raise money for NIL. Those same donors who were donating for the Capital Project, it's really hard at a school like that to turn around and ask them to pay for, you know, an offensive tackle now. It's mm-hmm. And that is the challenge at a lot of schools that are below the Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama level.
Yes. In your story, Andy, you mentioned the obvious example, which is Keith Carter, the athletic director at Ole Miss. Obviously, Ole Miss positioned for a playoff bid right now. They're the popular comp because, well, the facilities in Oxford are fine. They're better than mm-hmm. fine. They're good.
There's nothing wrong with them.
No, they were a kind of a model institution when it came to the indoor practice facility. They were one of the first schools to get it up and running in the SEC 20 years ago. They did, you know, if you've been to Vaught-Hemingway Stadium, it's not ideal. And they basically just stopped and said, hey, we're going to stop with the superfluous renovations and individual capital projects that are going to do this with the Jumbotron or this or that. We are going to put it into the roster. So in your piece, I thought you outlined it very well because you just said, hey, but before we get into the conjecture part of this, let's just say how they get here, right? And then is it possible in terms of burning the political equity to make this look like it works long term? You also mentioned Phil Longo. That's the now departed head coach at Sam Houston State, who was a very, very odd choice. I was kind of told some stuff off the record on how this came to be. I don't know what I'm allowed to share, but it was an odd choice schematically and philosophically. We should fill everybody in. I guess people would know Phil Longo most from he was an OC at Ole Miss. He was an OC at North Carolina.
Mac Brown hired him as the OC at North Carolina. And when Mac hired him, I remember talking to Mac about this. And Mac said, I hired him. He'd worked with Matt Luke at Ole Miss. Matt Luke is a former O-line coach. He was the head coach at Ole Miss at the time. And Mac said, you know, I wanted him because he could run a spread, but he liked to run the ball and he was willing to run the ball. And when North Carolina was at its best, when Sam Howell was the quarterback in Mac Brown version 2.0, they did run the ball very well. They had Michael Carter and Javonte Williams and were great running the ball with Phil Longo as the OC. So I think that was the idyllic version that Luke Fickell thought he was going to get. That's not what happened. They were not very successful running the ball. So they couldn't morph what Wisconsin was into what Luke Fickell thought they could be.
This is where I want to go chicken and the egg, actually, Andy, because we could take this a number of directions. I don't think Longo was a great hire for Wisconsin, and it has nothing to do with the historic philosophy or the ideology of run the ball. And I'm someone who grew up on the triple option, and I think there are places where running the ball is sort of tantamount to the identity. Just like I think the next hire at the University of Florida will probably be an offensive guy because there's kind of something in the culture there that's a DNA that Spurrier set, and it's really hard to get around that. Wisconsin could have been better with Phil Longo as their offensive coordinator if they had the better Joes part, right? Jimmies and Joes, not X's mm-hmm. and O's.
Yes, correct.
The next part of your story, and I enjoy the way you put this together, sir, it really came down to the fact that, like, you can say it was Phil Longo. Had Phil Longo had some better players, or they were able maybe to go out in the portal and spend some money on offensive linemen that were a little bit better suited to what Longo wanted to do in his run schemes, I think you would have seen a better ROI on that.
Or if they'd spent money on receivers that could have stretched the field, which then forced the defense to play you differently and allow you to run the ball better. I remember, I will never forget, turning on Wisconsin's game against Washington State, year one of Luke Fickell, watching the entire first half and going, they have no receivers who can get separation against Washington State. What the hell is going to happen when they get to Big Ten play? And that team won seven games. So that is the problem. And so allegedly they will be funded properly now. Now there's rev share. And Ross, you can explain this probably better than I can. This year, a lot of the teams front loaded their payroll before the rev share began July 1st. So a lot of people did the NIL of old and just paid everybody up so you could kind of double pay.
Yep.
That is over next time around. So what's that going to look like in terms of the revenue gaps or the payroll gaps?
Yeah, you're right. I would guess that at least half of power conference teams, football team, maybe more, at least front load a little bit probably. And then I'm guessing 15 to 20 of the 70 power conference teams front loaded pretty significantly, enough to where they hardly have to use any of their $20.5 million revenue pool that's really meant for this year that we're in. Mm-hmm. They hardly have to use any of that on this year's team, right? They're using it on next year's team. They're using it in the portal to retain players, all of that. What is going to be fascinating is it'll probably happen in the spring of 27, not this spring, but the next spring, is like the benefits of the front loading are gone, right? So now by that time, the revenue pool is going to have, well, by that time, I mean, we're a year and a half away from that. Who the hell knows? We might not, none of us might not be here. The earth might not exist. I mean, I don't know. The way things are going right now, who knows?
But dark.
But you know, in spring of 27, you're gonna have a pool, the revenue pool number, which is 20 and a half right now, be a lot more, right? It's going to be at least probably 24, 25. So you're going to have more to work with, but still that front loading is, the benefits that front loading are going to be gone. So what we're seeing play out right now, which is fascinating to me as we get closer to signing day and all that next month, is there's a segment of schools that didn't front load, right? That are losing recruiting battles against schools that did front load because those schools are just plain and simple able to offer more because they already paid for this year's roster. So we're seeing that play out little bit.
They have rev right share now. Money, which applies to this school year being July 1st to June 30th. So if you spend it in January, you're still using this year's money.
Yeah, it gets kind of confusing, but you could carry it over. This front load, you can kind of carry it over for about a year, year and a half, and it gives you a little more flexibility, especially in the portal, right? With the portal players, like we're going to see bidding wars for players in the portal where one school is going to have, having front loaded. And the highest front load I heard was, you know, somewhere in the 20s, mid-20s or so, right? Wow. Something like that. And yeah, and so, and I don't know that a lot of things, I don't know, you could probably count on one hand, maybe two hands on the teams that probably front-loaded 20 or more, I'm guessing. One of them, I just wrote a story about last week we talked about in Lubbock.
Texas Tech.
But they have all this money to spend sort of on the transfer portal. So that's going to be fascinating. Andy, what did Chris McIntosh say about sort of why, like, they didn't fund them more? Was it just the donor base was sort of resistant?
It was just, you couldn't, yeah. They were, I think, he didn't say this directly. I'm reading between the lines on this thing. I think he prioritized the capital project and raising the money for the capital project instead of doing what Keith Carter did and saying, please put this money toward the payroll. Because that is what Keith Carter said to Ole Miss donors. He said,
right,
send the money to the collective. The money you were going to give to me for stadium enhancements, give it to the collective. And I don't think McIntosh did that. I think that was the biggest mistake they made, because they were, it wasn't that they were so much, because of course they were never going to have, in that era, we're never having to close the payroll of Ohio State or Michigan. But they should have close to the payroll of Iowa and Minnesota and their normal peers in the Big Ten, Indiana. They didn't. And that's where you run into a problem. Now, with RevShare, those gaps are very different. Those gaps are much smaller. It does come down to how well you evaluate. Because I remember saying this to Matt Campbell when I saw him at Big 12 Media Days. I'm like, I will take you with $20 million to spend on players over somebody else with 30.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to pick them better.
Yeah.
Like that's just,
and develop some them better, guys are maybe, better at right? that. And use them better in a way. Yeah. I it's interesting what Wisconsin did, and we've seen it done, right? I think Florida was hoping last year that kind of materialized. It didn't, in keeping Billy Napier. And there's been some others that it's going to be interesting to see as we go. Penn State did it. Not that they were going to fire James Franklin last year, right? But they were like, all right, we're all in, like on this year, right? We're all in. That's sort of why.
But that's why they fired
3-3, they fired him, right? Yeah, because they did. They did the all in. They did all the resources like that.
The difference, I'd say, between Fickell and Napier is Napier, at least the last year three, which was 2024 season, and this particular year, he was properly resourced. So he was kind of out of excuses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fickell has not been yet. He will have no excuses after next year, though. Like, if they are not better next year, then you've just chosen wrong.
And one of the things is, I don't know if you got into this with Chris McIntosh, but like, you know, right now, you know, the rev share pool obviously is 20.5. You take 2.5 off of that because that's going to go to new scholarships. Up to 2.5 gets shaved off of that. So really, everybody's rev share pool is around 18 because most schools are offering the 2.5 in scholarships. So you're at 18. You're going to give 2 to 3 or so to basketball. You're going to get 1 or 2 to baseball, women's basketball, other sport. It's about 13 to 15 million, right?
I did get into this with him. He would not give me specifics, but he said they will be as resourced in football as any other Big Ten in terms of rev share.
But
so
what I was getting at is if you have the numbers 13 to 15 in rev share, that's not the real number right now.
Right.
Right. Because the real number is, at least in the top 10, probably is more like 20 or 22 or maybe upwards of 24 or 25. And that's taking your corporate sponsors who used to send money to the athletic department, and now you're redistributing that corporate sponsor money to the teams in the form of NIL deals that have gotten so far, a lot of them, through the NIL Go system.
Chris said that the cap feels softer than they initially.
Pretty soft.
So, and so, wait, and I think every AD would say that.
Can you walk that why it's soft out to people who don't understand, Ross?
Yeah, like, okay, so you got the rev share and they're supposed to be capped, you know, the 20.5 I just went through, where really for football it's, you know, let's say 15 million, right? I think the average is probably like 14 or 15 million for a program. That's the cap, right? You can't go above that, except if an athlete, as part of the house settlement, athletes can get NIL deals, you know, endorsement and commercial opportunities, just like any NFL player gets that, being in a commercial or a billboard, right? And that's on top of the rev share. And obviously, the College Sports Commission's been created in NIL Go to police those commercial and endorsement opportunities to make sure they're not phony, coming directly from boosters, which we've seen for the last 4 years. The problem with that, of course, is enforcing that. Right, we talked about it. I know on the old show quite a bit with Dan and Pat throughout the whole spring of, and we made a lot of predictions of this is going to be very difficult, if not impossible, and you know we're seeing it have many issues right now, but we are seeing a lot of stuff that has been sort of passed through NIL Go right now. And basically all it is schools taking their corporate sponsors and creating, and the corporate sponsor or the school or the collective creating NIL deals for players, and they're getting through because these are public companies and corporate sponsors who, you know, basically the sponsorships are just shifting. They're shifting from the athletic department to the players, you know?
I want to go back to McIntosh for a second. I think it's very easy to be cynical about a lot of the developments here. That's sort of like my de facto position on this show. But if this turns out positive for Wisconsin, and then I'm going to have a question for you, Andy, because I want to see if this is going to apply anywhere else in the landscape. I don't think you should necessarily hold it against Wisconsin or this athletic department or this athletic director. This was very much the DNA and the philosophy of the classic Big Ten. So a colleague of ours, Doug LaMarie and Bill Landis, they did a miniseries this summer, and I was on it, called The 25-Year Winter, which was about this period of time in which the Big Ten, and the sort of, I don't know if you call it like a joke or a slogan or whatever, you know, it was always about, they were the library conference, right? They were the conference where academics...
Before Urban Meyer showed up and taught them how to recruit.
How to be evil.
Yeah.
How to be evil like us.
Recruit.
Yeah, how to be evil like us folks down south. But no, they broke this out into like a six-hour miniseries, and I wouldn't hold it against Wisconsin if we all kind of thought and applauded almost on a consensus, right, that Luke Fickell was a good hire. This guy took Cincinnati to the playoff in the four-team format.
Yeah.
It's not like he forgot how to coach. Look at Sauce Gardner in the NFL. Look at the talent that went through Cincinnati and what he got. Tommy Tuberville jacked that program up. They were very bad on the roster when he got it.
It was a place where everybody won until Tuberville and Fickell had to fix that.
He did a great job. I remember going his first spring practice, and they had it at either, Cincinnati, Moeller or St. X. I can't remember which one it was. But they did a lot of work fundamentally. This guy knows, and again, he didn't forget how to be a college football coach. He knows what he's doing. So if this turns out, if we're talking about an 8 or 9 win program next year and maybe a playoff contender in 27, then I think you can understand that Wisconsin, much like many other programs and people and administrators and executives in this sport, were caught flat-footed in the change. And that's okay, provided that you hold true to what you told Andy and everyone else in the media this week, which is that we've identified the problem, and we've correctly identified it, which we'll figure that out in 2 years if they did, and then we're going to move on and join the modern age. I'm fine with all that. I really am not making fun of Wisconsin here.
I think Chris McIntosh knows that if this doesn't work, he's out too.
Well, there is, it's a short leash.
He will take the brunt as well as Fickell, and Fickell has the bigger buyout. But I also think you're right about that. And I think a lot of schools are in that situation. And that's why, you know, there are a lot of firings going on right now, that the ultimate problem was the schools just didn't accurately predict the future when no one could have possibly predicted the future. Like,
correct.
I would say, and it's the one I pointed out in the story, the school that has best predicted how this would all work and acted accordingly is Ole Miss. They figured it out early. Look at the Ole Miss grad just cackling.
Why is that?
Remember, Mandy, the first year at Ole Miss, it was a mess. They had two collectives. Remember the second year, Walker Jones came in, combined them. And I remember I was at the ceremony because they played Kentucky. I just happened to be there, and they invited me to this thing. I walk in, and it's like a room full of Ole Miss donors, wall to wall, and they were celebrating the creation of the Grove Collective.
Yeah,
the combining the two, and it was this huge celebration. And man, like from that point, it was like off and running. That was the fall of 22, probably.
Yes, and that's a year and a half or a year and 3 months after everything started. So
yeah,
but I go back like Florida, the whole Jaden Rashada thing, they had one collective. That collective then basically got doxxed because of what happened with the Jaden Rashada thing. All these schools just tried to throw stuff against the wall.
Guys, I think all of us had a similar conversation on like the first week that NIL happened. I remember talking to a compliance director at a playoff team and them saying, I have no idea. We don't know what's happening. Like, we don't know. We don't know what to do. We don't know how to proceed because the NCAA took it in the teeth and then they ran and hid instead of embracing the transition and trying to create some guidance for their constituents. everybody was going to screw this up. And like, yeah, I'm tongue in cheek about Ole Miss because like they probably had a 25-year start on figuring out player contracts. Like, I mean, you know, they inspired by SMU, but they were the real payroll to meet, as I reported through most of my career. They weren't alone. They weren't alone, but they're very good at it, right? But to go back to
dropping a duffel bag behind a gas station that serves
you'd be surprised,
the best fried catfish in the world is not the same thing.
You'd be surprised.
Dealing with Drew Rosenhaus.
Chicken fingers.
You've got to, but trust me, look, you want to talk, oh man, don't get me started. You're talking about financing under the table and creating a incentive contracts when you got to drop it off in a Cadillac. That's a hard thing to do.
This is a great point, though. It's like, you know, like Godfrey said, I mean, Ole Miss is not alone, right? There are plenty of others. There are probably 12, 15, 20 schools out there who did it the old-fashioned cheating way and did it often.
Yeah.
And when you have, I think when you have that group of donors who are willing to do that and have done it, it's certainly easier to move those donors over to where now it's even legal.
So did we just prove that Wisconsin was clean all these years? We knew they were clean.
Maybe. I think there's probably a lot of Big Ten programs like that.
Yes. When I wrote Meet the Bagman.
Gambling in this establishment? I am shocked.
When I wrote Meet the Bagman. Sorry. There were bagmen for every. Okay, it's been long enough. Like, I didn't find one for Vandy, okay? But everybody else in the SEC.
I wanted to be the guy from SEC Shorts, even though he's not actually. I don't even think he's actually a Vandy fan.
I don't think he is. I don't think he is. I didn't find one for Vanderbilt. I focused on the SEC West. Hey, confirmation here. I found one for everybody in the West and most of the East, okay? The apparatus existed, certainly, very similar to the SEC in places like Ohio State. Clutch your pearls in Ann Arbor. They did have one at Michigan. It was just a different kind of functionality. Your colleague, Andy, Steve Wiltfong, you hooked me up with him for a story I wrote this summer talking about the untapped power. And it goes back to what you said about just wait about the Big Ten. Just wait. I really kind of came around. He kind of preached some gospel about the idea of activating and, to Ross's point, creating new behavior rather than modifying old behavior in places like Illinois. Places like Wisconsin, also places where if you have $1 million to give and you might actually, I don't know, want a receipt for your accountant instead of dropping $25,000 in cash off and never seeing it again and having no way to state any kind of ownership claim to that or ROI. Yes, there are people at major football programs who are now invested in paying players legitimately. That is real. So the behavior and the culture, I'm not saying Wisconsin ran a completely clean program until NIL started. I am saying that culturally.
There may have been some under the table cheese curds for sure.
Free brandy for everybody. But look, culturally, again, we are three gentlemen from the South.
I love it. It probably had some recruits. They were recruiting at some SEC schools and the recruits are probably like, hey, you know, some of these other schools are offering a little bit extra.
And
the Wisconsin people are like, well, there's free bacon at Wando's every Tuesday night.
Or just a giant wheel of cheese appears at your hotel room the next morning.
That's right.
There's a little note on it said,
"More where this
Wisconsin
came from.
Cheddar." Yes, we are. Look, this podcast, we're three white guys from the Deep South. Okay. So this feels like breathing air to us culturally.
Not really diverse.
Yes. The way that you're from Louisiana, Ross. I mean, that's a different.
Yeah, we'll throw that in there. Half Cajun blood or something.
There you go. I don't even want to. I don't get into that. culturally, this thing is like breathing air for us. How many stories as writers, reporters, and we were working in newspaper jobs. This is just part of what we grew up in. Paying players as a function, as a belief system towards creating success on the field, is not a secondhand at maybe at Wisconsin or other places across the country. As it is for all the places that we, the three of us, kind of made our bones.
In Chris McIntosh's defense, I bet when he tried to ask people, hey, could you also donate to the collective? Thanks so much for your donation to the indoor facility. Could you also donate to the collective? There might have been some people who were like, I don't believe in paying players. To Godfrey's point.
I can confirm at another Big Ten school in conversation with people who are responsible for building those funds that happened a lot. There were other Big Ten schools where they really did have to go, look, it's an ideological issue. yes, I'll put my name on a library, but at that running back does not need it. I went to college. No one paid me to go to college. Like, that's a pervasive mentality.
You know why nobody paid you to go to college? Because you couldn't score any touchdowns.
Because you couldn't run a 4.4, white boy.
Speaking of that deep south, open car dealership. Over my right shoulder, look where I am. Speaking of the deep south, a little
your home.
Hill State. I'm in Stark, Vegas right now.
Oh, yeah.
So soon to be in Oxford.
Clanga.
There you go.
How many bells do you have?
Well, we're going to stay in Big Ten country when we come back, though, because there's been quite a bit of fallout from the story Ross wrote on Sunday about this private equity deal that the Big Ten would like to continue pushing through, even though Michigan and USC have provided quite a bit of resistance. Now you've got more resistance than Ross told you was coming from a very interesting group of people. Be right back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer, and Ross Dellinger had an excellent story on Sunday about the possibility of the Big Ten holding a vote on this private equity deal that we've talked about a few times on the show, but holding it possibly without Michigan and USC, which have been objectors to the entire deal. Ross, since that came out, you told us on Sunday to expect some pushback here from board members at various universities, not just Michigan and USC. Now we're seeing more of that.
Yeah, like, you know, you both been in journalism a long time, how this works when there's one story that sort of kind of breaks the ice on the news or whatever's happening, and then the ice is broken, right, and the water sort of rushes, and we're sort of seeing now board members from around the Big Ten speak out after the story Sunday about the vote in the potential deadline given to Michigan and USC to either come aboard, or you may get left behind, you know, in the grant of rights, and also financially. So we've seen the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, ACTA, which is sort of like a trade association for more than 20,000 university board members across the country, released like an open letter. And, you know, folks in the Big Ten will probably sort of roll their eyes at this association because they've never heard of it, or it doesn't move the needle, or whatever. Here's the thing. This is all I'm going to say about this. And in this association, is that this association is not just like magically doing this on their own, right? Like, they are being sort of brought in by sitting Big Ten university board members who either believe that they have been kept too much in the dark, not seen the full documents, governance documents of this capital deal, or they or just don't agree with the capital deal. So the letter basically says that the Big Ten president should abstain from voting on the capital deal. Right now, there's like a tentative vote scheduled, or at least the deadline around the November 20th or November 21st for Michigan and USC and everybody else, I guess, to come aboard, although it does seem like everybody else is on board. The one school that could probably cause this vote not to happen is certainly, as we discussed last pod, Ohio State, in where they sort of stand. And I mean, again, like the fact that the Big Ten signaled to Michigan and USC that there is this deadline and there is this potential vote sort of tells me that all the other 16 are supporting it.
I find that so shocking. Just to go back to what we were talking about on Sunday, Ross, it again, just to kind of pull all the verbiage off of this, what if I'm Ohio State, what's the incentive here?
Well, that's a good question. I think that the first thing is this is creates a uneven distribution structure, which Ohio State vastly benefits
which
from.
Ted Carter, even Ohio State's president, has been the most outspoken about.
Absolutely. Right. So
okay.
And they got even that. Ohio State we even benefit from more so than the other schools that are on the, so, quote, top tier, Penn State and Michigan, because there is, I've written about this, but not really in detail, but there is a brand, kind of a pool of money for brands, kind of like the ACC has created with a success initiative, which is like a brand TV viewership, you know, extra bonus money. And Ohio State, more than any other program, will probably get more of that brand pool than anything. So I think Ohio State will get the more money of anybody in the conference. It kind of creates this not this uneven revenue structure. So that's one reason. The other reason sort of is security, even though Ohio State really doesn't need to be need security, right?
Right.
It is a huge brand. But I think there's a thought of, we're not fans of a Super League. We don't want that to happen. We're just going to all sort of sign on to prevent that from happening. So a couple things there. I think the biggest thing, though, is the money and the uneven structure.
So here's the thing that Tony Petitti's the chair, the commissioner of the Big Ten. And I've noticed that the Big Ten office's rhetoric has been, hey, don't listen to your board's presidents. Just vote for this.
Yeah.
Is Tony Petitti aware of who university presidents work for?
Yeah.
This just feels like incongruent with a unified front, and that's usually the first sign that a conference is going to break apart. If not a unified front, then at least a unity amongst those who are true stakeholders. And that's what I feel like this conversation keeps going back to, which is why I still, like, I haven't really changed my stance on Sunday, Ross, and it seems like the fallout is kind of hitting accordingly, that this is the kind of disconnect that leads to, like, I think I called it a fissure, but like a serious separation here.
Yeah. Yeah, the this has been obviously the what we're talking about with the board member, the ACTA and all this stuff going on, sort of post story, is sort of because a lot of boards weren't really presented with any details until around September of this, and it was very you know, small details. And then slowly they started to learn more and more and more. But by that time, right, the decision had really kind of already been made, right? I mean, everything was sort of stamped in late September, early October. And so the board, look, the Big Ten and their the senior leadership, they've given information to the boards. Let's be clear. They have some slideshows, but the information was presented as, this is an educational meeting only. You don't have authority over this decision. Okay. Now you can imagine a group of people, some who were elected, like in Michigan and in Nebraska, the boards are actually elected. They view themselves as fiduciaries, right, of the long-term future of the university, and they're being told that they don't have authority over a decision that's $2.4 billion and extends their conferences, their school's grant of rights with the conference 10 more years. I think they're thinking, we have approved much smaller stuff than this. Like, why aren't we being involved in this? And that's just, you know, that's how it's gone, is it's been up until lately, it's been just with sort of presidents and athletic directors. And even, I think it's the Maryland board took the issue to the state attorney general, who actually came back with a response that because this is a like conference affiliated decision, the board doesn't have authority. And it does. Right. It's just the president that and chancellor that has this authority. Well, and that's the way apparently a lot of schools.
Maybe officially, but here's the thing. Right. If the president does something the board doesn't want to do, guess what happens next?
We have a new president.
Well, and Andy, that's why, you know, University of Michigan's president is not going in voting for this, or at least right now, because the board is saying no. A majority of the board is saying no. I don't know that any other, except for USC, I don't know of any other Big Ten university board whose membership, the majority of whose membership is against it. There might be a few on these boards, but I don't know that there's a majority of any school that's whose board is against it.
I have two questions. It feels like some of this is inescapable given the diversity of the Big Ten in terms of this is not a regional conference. These universities, despite whatever they put out in PR, are so remarkably different from one another in their priorities, in their structures, public, private, all of that. So this feels like something that's just a very modern problem when you have a coast-to-coast university that's comprised of some of the richest schools in the country that are public, some of the richest that are private, we're serving a lot of masters is what I'm getting at. And
yeah,
that, I don't know if that's a question. The next one is a question, Andy. This kind of goes back to like, this is how I judge all these things. Would Mike Slive have let this happen? And it feels like, it feels like, Andy, this is something like you, when I started off as a national reporter, I remember having this conversation with you, kind of getting learned up. And you would talk about how, like, you know, Slive was the grandfather in public and the gangster behind closed doors. This, all of this development and Ross's story and the dynamic at play, it feels like the first half of a behind closed doors conversation that would have happened if Mike Slive was running this. And then the resolution would have been the thing that leaked.
Or Jim Delaney. I mean, Jim Delaney.
Yeah, Jim Delaney too. Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Like, there were a lot of unanimous votes, quote, I'm using air quotes here, unanimous votes. That did not start unanimous.
Sure.
Like, yeah.
You're not supposed to get the back and forth publicly.
But the reason
not supposed to happen.
The reason I bring this up, Ross, is that this feels very dangerous to have this kind of discourse out in public where you are building factions, because we teased it on Sunday and we were joking, but we weren't. You're putting programs and brands, billion-dollar brands, into play. If we sense there's a true disconnect leaving this particular situation, however this resolves, unless it's unanimous, which it doesn't sound like it's going to be, you've weakened the position of the top brands of the Big Ten when the Super League just feels like this planet killer that's just looming beyond the horizon.
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't think the Big Ten wanted it to play out publicly, obviously, but when you're good at your job,
I'll say it for you.
Well, when you don't involve the board members, they feel, I guess, slighted, and they have, you know, information, a fraction of information.
Right.
I think we've seen they're not gonna just like stay quiet. And you know, when you set a vote date and you tell that to schools, two schools that feel like they're sort of been forced or threatened, again, they're not going to stay quiet. So, like, there's a reason that this is starting to seep out, and it's probably damaging. It's probably damaging to the deal. I don't know what the future of the deal is. I think there's a meeting, you know, Tuesday actually at the University of Maryland about this, and I'm sure this week and next there'll be board meetings across these Big Ten schools. I don't know what more they're going to share with the board, but before the alleged vote next Friday, which may not happen, by the way. I mean, who knows? There's been like three or four dates that have been set up for a vote and it didn't happen because, of course, you want to get there and you want to have unanimity, and that just hasn't been the case.
What's the sort of next? Again, from the casual standpoint or the layman, what is the next development for this? Can you walk that out for us just so we're clear?
Well, I guess, well, what are the options here? So lane one would be suddenly Michigan and USC change their mind, right? And they agree to the deal and it goes through and here we are. And you know, all the schools get their upfront money between $110 and $190 million. And each and upfront money, depending on the tier, what tier sort of you are in. Lane two would be that the 16 agree to it without Michigan and USC, and they sign the grant of rights because all this deal requires a 10-year extension of the grant of rights, and all the other Big Ten schools are flooded with capital cash, USC and Michigan are not. And they're in the
and
league.
Michigan's
until,
like, hey, you guys,
Mr. Ellison,
millionaires and billionaires that went here, and some
help us,
you know, who might be married to billionaires who went to Illinois.
Yeah.
Could you make us whole here?
God,
okay,
sucks,
thanks,
for
great.
Illinois.
Yeah,
and lane C, I guess, or lane three, whatever, would be that it didn't happen at all, right? It just completely dies, and they don't do it, and then I think what happens then is that it's done perhaps on a school basis, an individual basis per school, which a lot of schools are already looking, even from outside of the Big Ten, mm-hmm. right, are already down the road, sort of with capital partners.
Sounds like, well, most of those scenarios, guys, except for it dying completely or we magically have resolution, like suddenly USC and Michigan grow warm to this concept, we're going to leave this with a lasting image or a lasting belief of there's a fundamental disconnect here, and we're going to leave with a more weakened Big Ten product.
Yeah, I'm telling you right now, a Big Ten that doesn't have Michigan completely on board,
yeah,
is in danger.
That's where I'm going. So, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. So, we'll see. This is a game of chicken that I'm not sure you want to play, but they're playing it, and it will be fascinating to watch as we go forward. Gentlemen, it has been a blast. We will see you guys on Thursday. We will know the college football playoff rankings, and we got to talk some games because we have Texas going to Georgia. We have Oklahoma going to Alabama. We got Michigan still fighting for its playoff life at Wrigley Field against Northwestern. We got some fun games. Notre Dame going to Pitt.
Yeah.
Great. We'll talk about it all on Thursday.